It's been a while. Not for me, for you.
You have been on a hiatus.
Yeah, I haven't podcasted in a year and a half, guys. Nobody's heard me ever.
Your fault.
I have no online presence. I'm a mole man.
You look like a mole man, even though I got the mole.
I got moles. You want to see some moles?
No,
I'm not taking it. Right, my shirt is off right now, guys.
Zach, put your shirt back on.
No. Fuck you, man.
Dude, that wasn't very nice. First time back, and you're just going to start out like that?
It's because you, that we took such a long hiatus to go and fucking finish school and get a job.
Dude, you know how it goes. Not really.
No, I didn't finish school, and I didn't go get a new job, so I don't actually know how that
it's
goes.
It's true, but...
I instead stayed where I was and started podcasting like every white dude.
Not every white dude.
I'm a classic, you know? I'm a classic.
I believe the term is called hipster.
Oh, fuck you, man. I don't fucking roll my jeans.
He's got his nice trimmed up beard.
Don't insult me.
Flat brim hats.
Don't insult me. Welcome back, bunkies. That's what we're calling you guys from now. We decided on bunkies. Lucas's decision. You can blame him.
No, we did not decide bunkies.
You don't like that for a name of our listeners, which we may... I don't know if we have any right now because it's been a year and a half since we just...
Well, technically, no, but they're all going to come back.
Yeah, all of our loyal bunkies are coming back to bunk up in the bunk bed.
Everyone knows they all subscribe for notifications to our Twitter, so as soon as we send the first tweet out, they're going to be back.
And they're going to be really excited. Yeah. We're on the streets, people are hyped.
Pretty sure we're going to shoot to the top of the iTunes podcast charts. Pretty cool.
Number one in comedy. We're not even going to be in TV and film. We're just going to go into comedy. We don't even have jokes.
I was thinking of maybe dabbling a little bit.
You know how Lil Nas X just tried to game the system with the country charts, and they were like, nah, we're going to slide through.
I think we can make it.
I think we got enough charm.
We can fake it till we make it and then get signed to a major label.
Yeah. Yeah, for podcasting. How that happens all the time in 2019.
Yeah, everyone gets signed for labels and podcasting.
Yes, we're back. The return of Tales from the Bunk Bed. It's been a while. And this is the rebirth of the show. It's starting fresh.
How long has it been? I think, what?
Like, just over a year. I think, like, was the Winter Olympics the last episode we did?
So yeah, probably like
February of last year.
3 weeks, right?
A year and 3 weeks ago?
No. Just 3 weeks.
Just 3 weeks? It's just been 3 weeks. We've just been holding these in the vault
for a
while.
Yeah, it's just been a quick... It is currently 2018. April. Yep. Don't know about that, but all right. Welcome back.
We were back because we finally have something we really want to talk about, and we needed to change up the show a little bit because it was too long and dumb and a lot of nonsense that didn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, we're just going to talk about pop culture and shit we like. Just shit we like. That's really, that is the criteria for Tales from the Bunk Bed now. Shit that at least one of us likes.
Yeah, because to be honest, the whole premise of the podcast is... yours and I's interests in pop culture.
Two brothers.
Yeah.
We're the two brothers.
That happened to share a bunk bed at one point in their lives.
Yeah, for a while.
I don't miss that.
I do not miss that.
You know what? Bunk bed's pretty cool, so you should probably stop hating them.
Which one do you like more, the top or the bottom?
I thought you were going to talk about which bunk bed we had, because we had two bunk beds growing up. We had a metal one. It was blue.
That one was the shit.
And then we had a wooden... We had a wooden one as well, which you cracked your head open on.
No,
right?
Tori cracked my head open on the ladder as we were fucking around. Yeah. Because that used to be in Tori and Jess's room.
Yeah, so that one caused some bloodshed, where the blue one was just crickety.
It's a lot more than bloodshed, the wood one, because with the blue one, you didn't have to have the board for the mattress. So, but on the wood one, you remember that stupid board on the top?
I do remember.
So when you slept on top, if you ever pissed the person off the bottom, they just throw their legs up, start kicking up the board, so you fucking start rocking up and down. Yeah, top bunk isn't great when you're living with siblings. Maybe you find it camp. But not when you have a sibling who 9 times out of 10 is very annoyed with you and wants to make your life living out.
Yep. I always enjoyed being on the top in the blue bunk because you could just kind of shake around like Jim Carrey and Bruce Almighty and shake the entire bunk bed and really piss off the bottom bunk.
Which was, I mean, it was us two. We were the only two in these bunk beds. Yeah, we were the ones who shared them.
Yep. So just basically the goal was to piss off Zach. But here we are.
We're here. And why are we here? What are we talking about?
Oh, ho, ho. I bet you'd like to know.
I'm talking about what is quite possibly my favorite movie of the year right now.
Favorite movie of the year. Yeah, I can put it up there for now. I haven't seen too many.
I've seen a bunch.
Yeah, you see a lot more than I
do. This is the second Matthew McConaughey being at the Florida Beaches movie of the year. The first was Serenity, which you did not see.
Nope.
And is that's a wild movie, but we won't get into that one now. That's one of those, it's not a good movie, but it is very entertaining to watch, and it has a hell of an ending. But this movie in particular, it's phenomenal. And the movie we were talking about is Harmony Korine's latest, The Beach Bum, which is about a beach bum, believe it or not. Can you believe that?
It is actually about a poet living
The poet laureate living in a beach.
The Florida Keys. Florida Keys. Is it the Florida Keys?
Only it's Florida Keys in Miami. Yeah. Starts in the Florida Keys and goes to Miami and goes back to the Keys and back to Miami.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
This movie's fucking incredible.
A little Matthew McConaughey, a little Snoop-a-loop, a little Isla Fisher.
She's great. So before we get into exactly what this movie is.
Hold on. I just got to say something real quick. Because you kept calling her Isla Fisher. Like
Isla. Isla sort of like island.
Isla Nublar. Yeah. Or something like that out of Jurassic Park, which is not her name. So I just had to call you out on that one because you kept saying it, and I was like, nah, dude, nah.
I watch a lot of Jurassic Park movies.
You're supposed to know movies.
I watch a lot of Jurassic Park movies. Well, so here's the thing, and this is something that is often run into when a bunch of pedantic movie nerds decide to podcast, and most of your life was spent looking at the internet and not speaking to people. You read things, you don't say them, so until you decide, all of a sudden you're doing an audio medium, you're like, oh, now I have to say the name that I've been reading? And that's when you're like, wait, was this right? And oftentimes, we're not right.
Yeah.
As I keep learning many times. I used to call Anton Yelchin Anton Yelkin. Because you never believe it's the ch. You never believe that ch. But it was.
Those people, man.
Yeah. Okay, so back to what we were talking about, the Harmony Korine of it all. So we were both introduced to Harmony Korine with the same movie. When was it? This was a while ago. This was right after
2012.
A little later than I thought, actually. So this was 3 years after I graduated high school. So you were at this point, you were like, a sophomore
in high school, yeah. I think.
You were definitely too young to watch the movie and understand it. And it even went over my head at the time. It's Spring Breakers. We didn't even say that it was. But yeah. The movie with James Franco and Selena Gomez and Vanessa Hudgens, and it's another Florida trash movie. We watched it. Didn't love it at the time, to say the least.
Didn't know. I feel like I didn't know at all what was going on.
No, not at all. Still, as I remember, sophomore Lucas basically came to me and said, "Hey, Selena Gomez is in this movie in a bikini. We're gonna watch it, right?" I said, "Okay, I'll watch it." That's all we knew going in was not what we expected.
Pretty sure I didn't even ask you to watch it. I think I was just like, hey, have you heard about this movie? I'm going to watch it. Selena Gomez is in a bikini. You said, oh yeah, I heard about it. I was thinking about watching it too. We should watch it together. And I was like, all right.
So we did that.
And then I showed it to my friends later that week, I think.
Yeah.
And I think they were all just as confused as I was.
Yeah, not a kid, not a movie for children. Not a movie for people who are just looking for surface level entertainment. Very strange. Didn't like it at the time. Flash forward to now, 2019, and his latest comes out, The Beach Bum, starring Matthew McConaughey, which we very much wanted to go see, and we did go see.
Similar style movie.
Well, that's what's interesting is, so we didn't like Spring Breakers back when we saw it in 2012, and that was 2019, and we went and saw The Beach Bum, and as I said at the beginning of this episode, it is my favorite movie of the year right now. So things have changed. So much so, before we get into the movie, without talking about this, we were leaving it and we were like, well, we have to rewatch Spring Breakers now because I'm pretty sure we're going to like that movie way more.
Yeah.
Like, just from the context of this and looking back on it.
The one thing I've started to understand a lot more is, like, I'm not going into every movie like, oh, this is going to be like a masterpiece of film. I'm just kind of like, all right, this movie is going to be a little more ridiculous. I like kind of taper my expectations towards what I'm going to see. And it, I find myself enjoying the movies a lot more, which I know a lot of my friends don't do.
Well, that, I mean, that's a general audience problem in general. Where, like, they go into every movie and it's like, well, this is either going to be the greatest thing in the world or the worst thing ever. Yep. Like, it can never be in between, and it's a general issue. But even so with, like, these movies, it's not even necessarily that. It's that, like, there's so much more going on that we just didn't at all even come close to picking up at on the time. Subtext and things yeah. like that. And even just, like, the humor, because there's so much humor that if when you're that young and you don't have the context for, you don't know why it's funny. Like, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that we were dying laughing at now that we probably wouldn't have been laughing at if we'd watched it in 2012 with Spring Breakers.
No.
Which is basically the whole first act of this movie is so wild. It opens with Matthew McConaughey's character, he's in the Florida Keys already, right? That's where it opens, and he is just fucking Moondog. That's his name.
Moondog.
He's like a once lauded poet. He's like, he hasn't written anything worth shit in a long time.
And apparently he had hit some fame with some stuff he had.
Yeah, written. That's what I'm saying. Like, once lauded. So there was a time, I would say, it seems like he was probably like a 70s, 80s, maybe counterculture era, like got real big, got enough notoriety.
I feel like it might have even been the 90s.
Maybe.
Just the way they were making it. Feel.
That's true.
And with the way he
And they did have the old bit. Footage, too. You're right.
With the way like, he dressed a little bit.
80s and 90s, yeah, for sure. But yeah, once a lot of poet, and now he's just kind of like washed up, and he's in the Florida Keys, literally just being a degenerate beach bum. It's so good, this whole opening, like 20 minutes, where it's just him getting fucking wasted with a bunch of Key Largo scumbums, like doing coke in a dingy bar in the bathroom, and just getting wasted and sleeping with women. To write up when he goes back to Miami to meet his wife. And then right when he gets there, it's like a 2-minute supercut of him just giving her head. It is hilarious. It's so funny.
And I think the great part is at the beginning of the movie, he's like, it starts out and he's like, you think he's like this bachelor living in the Florida Keys, like hitting on all these random ladies. And then he's like, oh, gotta go back to the wife. And you're like, oh, what's going on with that? And it just unravels a whole ball of yarn.
Yeah, this movie is crazy because there's like, there is so much going on, but at the same time, the movie is like, none of this matters to the character in this movie and what this movie is about, which is one of the things that's brilliant about it. And his wife's whole arc is pretty testament to that. We'll do spoilers in a little bit. We'll skate around it for a minute. What's your phone doing?
Oh, you know, just talking.
The machines, they're going to fucking kill us. So we'll start off, we'll skirt around spoilers for a minute, but I really want to get into this and what happens in this movie. So we'll give a little primer. Obviously, you all know we like it at this point. But so basically, yeah, he's in the Keys. He goes back to his wife. His daughter's getting married. He's got to be at the wedding. All this shit happens, and events lead to he basically has to finally write this next great poetry book that he has been like talking about writing for 15 years or whatever. He's been talking about it forever, and now he has to do it. Things happen that he basically has to do it or he's fucked.
Yeah.
And he just goes out on this crazy, like, it's kind of a vision quest, to an extent, but kind of like a white man's bullshit vision quest, you know, which is, we'll get into a large theme of this movie in general, which leads him to, a rehab facility where he meets a crazy Zac Efron, back to an old friend played by Martin Lawrence, who runs a dolphin ship. It basically just takes him through to like character to character and set piece to set piece. And it's the best stoner comedy I've seen in a very long time. It's one of the best stoner comedies I've ever seen. It's not just going for the laughs either.
Dating back to Pineapple Express?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Easily the best of them. But like, even in the grand scheme of it, just because of like what, when you even just peek a little bit under the curtain of what this movie is on the surface, there is a lot going on here.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more to talk about. So on the surface, it is just this wacky, super fun, stoner comedy. It's funny, like we saw it and our dad asked me about it. He asked me about it the next day. He's like, did you like that movie? I was like, yeah. He goes, really? Like, he saw the trailer. He saw Matthew McConaughey on the late night show. He's like, really? Like, this movie? And I know he probably wouldn't like it because it is just, like, maybe a little too ridiculous for him at this point.
Yes.
But there is a lot going on. But it is also hilarious. Snoop Dogg gives a great performance. I love when he shows up in movies. And he's just... It's funny because he's just playing Snoop Dogg in this, but he's not Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
You give this because you told me about this.
So, I don't know. I was watching one of the interviews with him before the movie, before we went and saw it, just because I was curious to see what we were getting into. And apparently the director had come to him and asked him if he wanted to be a part of the movie, and he came back with script notes. And the only script note he had was that they wanted him to actually play himself, to be Snoop Dogg himself. But he came back with one script change, and that was that his character was going to be named Ray, short for Lingerie.
God, I love Snoop Dogg so much.
Because apparently he called the director at like 4:30 and said, he goes, I had an epiphany. He goes, we're going to name the character Ray, as in lingerie.
God, I love him so much. And he's just, he is, like, you can see why, like, Corinne went specifically to Snoop Dogg and was like, I want you to be you in this movie, because, like, it's not just for laughs, it's fun, like, I guess plot-wise, but even just, like, aesthetically-wise, like, so much of who his character is bleeds into why this is a great stoner comedy, too, because, like, he just sets up Moondog's character to have these fucking ice cream cone-sized joints,
yep.
And the Rastafarian pilot, and all these crazy things that happen that, like, you couldn't do without it being Snoop Dogg. Like, nobody, it doesn't sell in this movie if it's not specifically Snoop Dogg, because if it isn't Snoop Dogg, it's a character you're clearly mimicking Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Like, so might as well go to him.
Which is, I feel like, is what he was doing. I mean, obviously he's doing in Spring Breakers when he had James Franco basically dressed up as Riff Raff.
Yeah, that's true.
He would have liked to have Riff Raff in that role at that time, but I doubt he would have.
Or so maybe Riff Raff just couldn't act.
Yeah.
And that was as simple as that, but Snoop Dogg acts. So if, like, you, that's the guy you're, it's like, cause Jimmy Buffett's playing himself in this movie.
Yep.
Which, you get a great little Snoop Dogg, Jimmy Buffett duet.
Yeah, that's a little good back and forth thing.
It's great. yeah, it's just, dude, it's kind of just like a movie that moves set piece to set piece and plays it like the stakes are low. Like, it's like, you know, stoner comedies are classic, like, low stakes played to be high stakes. That's what all, like, you know, it, like, it'd always be like, oh, we're overblowing something that isn't that big to be way bigger than it is. And I feel like Pineapple Express kind of flipped that by being like, oh no, this is actually something serious and we should be freaking out by this. Whereas then, like, this movie is like, here's a bunch of shit that you think in a traditional movie would be like stopping the movie to be like, this is huge. This is what the movie's gonna all be about. And then a scene later acts like it almost never didn't happen.
Yeah, they just blow past
it. Yeah, because it's all about Moondog, and in Moondog's life, it's about riding the good vibes.
It's carefree living. Yeah. Just kinda...
So he can't linger on any of that shit too long. So he's just gotta keep moving with the vibes, and he grabs his paps. Lots of paps in this
Lots
movie.
Of PBR, yeah.
Oh, man. Alright, so I think we should just dive right into all the spoilers. People, if you haven't seen it yet, you know we like it, you should go see it. If you don't like wacky stoner comedies, you're probably not gonna like it. But at the same time, there's a lot going on. And if you aren't sold, stick around for spoilers if you don't care.
Obviously, there's not as many laughs as there was in Pineapple Express. But there is some laughs.
But there is there. But at the same time, there is a lot. It is, I mean, this is a comedy, for sure. It's not like it's comedic. It is a comedy. It's just like, I mean, Pineapple Express is James Franco and Seth Rogen and Danny McBride. I don't know if there's a sentence uttered in that movie that isn't technically a joke, you know? Like, everything it can be laughed at in that movie. This has actually got something to say, which is really interesting. So I guess that's what we'll get into with spoilers. So what we were talking about with, like, the fact that there's a lot of high-stakes shit in this movie that they just skate over, it throws it right in your face almost immediately, because the end of the first act is his wife dying in a car accident after they go out She's driving wasted. I mean, yes. She comes to get, it's a wedding drunk. Night. Yeah. And they go out joyriding wasted.
In a Lamborghini or Ferrari. Whatever, or something.
Fucking crazy nice ass. Cause his wife is the rich one. That's what's funny about this. At first you get back and you're like, oh, is he like, he's like super rich. And he even says, I forgot how fucking rich we are when he gets back to the mansion. And then you find out, oh, it's all her money. That's her her money. It's not his. He's not a rich, famous poet. He's just a famous poet who married a rich person, so he is gets to keep living this crazy lifestyle.
Did they even allude to how his wife had all this money?
No, it may have been familial, but they don't. I don't know if they actually specifically say it. They just say it's hers.
Yeah.
So what I love about this scene of the car accident is, one, it's like it's played in like a montage of what seems like good times. You don't think something's bad can happen, and all of a sudden they're just on the wrong side of the road.
Oh, and there's like three cuts where they're driving, and every time I'm looking, I'm like, they're on the wrong side of the road. Something's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and then eventually there's headlights, but they don't show a crash. It just fades to black, and then it's a hospital, and you're like, oh, wait.
No, they're in an ambulance.
Oh, an ambulance. Yeah. And that's for like 2 minutes, you're like, oh, wait, is this movie about to become like a serious movie? Because that ambulance is a little bit, like, it's kind of serious. You know, like,
yeah.
You feel it. And then it goes to the hospital.
The first thing he says is, where's my wife?
Yeah. And then the hospital, and he sees his wife, and immediately, the minute their hands touch, it's like happy music, and Moondog smiles, and she dies. She literally dies, and it's like not even played that sad. And then after that, it's not, oh my God, your wife died. He goes, your wife died, now here's what that means for you. And what it means is she wrote in her will that he doesn't get any of the money or houses or anything until he writes his next great novel that he's been talking about for so long. He has to finally write it.
Yeah.
So that's right. So what I love about this is that it plays into the bigger theme is because obviously you're like, oh, this is going to be about how like his wife dies and it changes him. That's not all the theme of this movie. It's about how that is the catalyst for why he has to now write his next great novel. This movie is,
I think this is why I love it so much is because of how the focus just flips on a dime. Like, all of a sudden, you're like, at first you're like, oh, it's his wedding, and there's maybe some relationship issues, and then next it's, oh, his wife dies, and then it's, oh, how is he gonna, he's gotta write this novel, and it just keeps flipping. It seemed like every 15 to 20 minutes, the focus changed to something else, and it was kind of amazing
how they just did this. Well, and it's funny, because, like, some people have talked about it, it's like, well, it's just like a stoner comedy that's almost like a series of vignettes, because he's just, like, stumbling into set piece to set piece, yes. And the things happen, and then he's gone from that. It doesn't matter at all, and the next thing. But there is one thing that this movie, like, generally in the plot, it's about it, and it is him writing that novel and succeeding, because, I mean, we're in spoilers now. He ends up winning the Nobel Peace Prize, or the Pulitzer Prize at the end of this movie for his great poetry book. So what I love about how they don't play the death as being like, oh my God, it's this, like, I can't, like, it's going to be, he's going to go get clean, and it's going to be like a whole change of his lifestyle because he killed his wife. He's a part responsible for dying. No, it's about how his wife died. This is like a part of it that's, this whole movie is kind of just calling out our hero worship and celebrity idolism and stuff like that, and how we like let these type, especially the white men of these type of people, get away with everything. Like, I've basically been saying this movie is about white male privilege run fucking rampant, and it's absolutely amazing. Like, in every sense of it, there's so much. And this, the moment I love about this is, so like, think about every biopic you've ever seen about a famous white man that does something great. There's some big thing that is the moment that like catalysts into that. You know, whatever it be. It doesn't have to be a death. But, you know, I think some big moment from their childhood or young adulthood or whatever. And that's, like, the big thing you can go back to and be like, there's the moment that's it. That
drove him to do whatever.
And, like, all it is with this is, it's not that his wife dies, which is why the movie doesn't linger on that and be like, oh, be sad. It's that because his wife died, the only way he can have his money and house is to keep living the degenerate life he wants to keep living is to now write his book again. So it is the same. It's like, oh yeah, this is a catalyst. But literally, this woman died, and that's not even the catalyst. But because she died, and she was like, she loved him so much that she put that in her will. It's fucking crazy. It's just like there's so many levels of that to this, and that's the beginning of it. Right there's that's when it like it started to click for me. And then as the movie kept going, I was like, oh my god, this movie is fucking brilliant. It really is just laying into this white male privilege. Because for the first half hour, you do kind of think, oh, is this just gonna, is this just like a beach bum comedy?
Yeah.
It's gonna be yokes all fucking day. It's gonna be awesome. And then as soon as that happens, you're like, oh no, this movie does have something to say. It's just not what, like, what you're watching on screen would traditionally be trying to tell you. And it's really, really well crafted. But pretty much as soon as you get over her scene of death, it's right back to fun. Because you get his rehab, which is where he meets Zac Efron.
In his JNCO jeans.
Guys, Zac Efron wears JNCO jeans in this movie. If that's not reason enough to see it, like, I don't know what to tell you. Not only is he wearing JNCO jeans, he's got fucking highlight spiked hair. And I don't even know how to describe his facial hair. Can you describe his facial hair?
No.
Yeezy glasses?
I don't even know.
It's just, shutter
shades, yeah. Sort of stuff. Like, I don't even know.
Like, just Google it. But, like, his character's amazing. And this is another character so that feeds into this whole idea of what this movie is talking about with, like, white male privilege and amok. And this is another little thing, specific area. It's doing, literally, it's like, I think this movie is fucking brilliant. I think it's a masterpiece. So his character, and it's there, and it's kind of in your face, but the movie also, like, you can tell it's, like, this isn't a thing, like, that we're that interested in exploring as, like, a thing, but it is there intentionally. He's in rehab for huffing paint. His dad caught him huffing paint as a teenager or whatever, so he's been in and out of rehab all, like, his whole adult life.
Yeah.
He's, like, a hardcore Christian. And what's brilliant about that, so there's, one, it starts where they're, like, they're in the room of the rehab and he's playing Creed. This is fucking Creed, man! And they're like dead and he's like super intense and you can tell he's just a fucking tweaker, a Florida tweaker. And they break out, they fucking break through a fucking window with a chair and just run out of the rehab facility and go on a crazy bender. And they keep doing, so like, they do a bunch of horrible shit. One, they just get like totally fucking hammered, but they're, and just doing bad shit. But like, they rob an old guy by Zac Efron smashing a bottle on the back of his head and knocking him out and taking everything on him. Not just
like an old guy walking down the street. He is rolling down the street in his hover round.
This is like, this,
knock him out with the beer bottle.
This is a very fucked up scene in a different movie. And it's kind of it's fucked up. I mean, I'm not saying it's not fucked up, but it's like, because again, the way this movie is playing everything, that's not the focus of this movie. Well, so you're watching it, and when you watch it, it's fucked up, but almost immediately you're like, wait, we're never even going to look back then.
Yeah, so this is one of like the changes in focus, where it's like, oh, he's got to go to rehab and stay clean and whatever and write his poet novel. And they're like threatening to take away everything and put him in jail. And he's there for what, a day? In rehab for a day, and they break out. They run, they knock out an old man, assault him, and take his money. And then they just move on to worse and worse things. And you never look back at rehab, at assaulting this old man. It just moves on to them going down the story. And
exactly. The white male privilege run amok. But yeah, with Zac Efron's character specifically, though, so he does these like bad things. He says two specific things in this, in his, because he's only in this one subject. Like I said, the movie just like brings in characters and then they're gone. At first he says something like, it's just when they're like getting drunk. It's cool. Oh, it's when they first break out and they're like running down the street. And I think like they literally go up to, there's people out eating at a cafe and they just grab their drinks off the table and keep walking. And Zac Efron's like, no, it's cool. Cause like Jesus died for our sins already. So we're all good. And then there's another, it's right after they smash the bottle on the guy, and he goes, no, it's, God did bad shit too, so we're all good. And like, obviously it's a very ridiculous example in the movie to be like, obviously like, no, not, but there, I'm sure there are some tweaker people like him who have twisted it to believe like that. Yes. But it's a, like, I'm sitting there going like, oh my God, this is like, he's shitting all over, like, not even just white male, but like white Christianity in America and how they've taken their faith all over this country in different pockets and taking little pieces here and there and warped it into whatever they want to believe. You think about like a Westboro Baptist church or something like that, where they've taken like, well, here's like five things from the Bible and we're going to believe all of that, even though there's everything else in it contradicts everything we're saying here. We're just going to take these few things and warp it to our beliefs.
Oh yeah.
And that's exactly what Zac Efron's character is in this movie. And it's not even like focused on it. You can almost barely even hear him say these things unless you're paying attention. But like, it's there, and it's like, oh my god, that's so good. And then, which is maybe the best set piece of the movie, he comes back into life with Martin Lawrence's character, the Dolphin Tours captain, who yeah. is, god, so good to see Martin Lawrence back in the movie. It's Captain Whack, that's his name.
Captain Whack.
And he runs a sketchy-ass Dolphin Tour in Miami.
And he brings on Moondog as his first mate.
Oh, Jesus. And their first voyage out. So first off, even they go on the first voyage, he's talking, he meets him at the fishing dock, and they're just like shooting the shit, and he goes, how many, because somehow he keeps getting his like license pulled or whatever. He goes, how many people die? He goes, four. That's it. He's like, four? That seems like a lot. He goes, nah, man, the Dolphin Tours game, only losing four people, that's good. So right away you get an idea of exactly who this character is.
He talks about how he keeps getting his license suspended. And he goes, oh, how do you keep getting back? Ah, technicality.
Technicality. So, yeah, they go out on the tour. And I'm going to talk more about Martin Lawrence's character and the themes of it all. But the scene in general we need to talk about. They go out on the tour with nice, this family. Nice, typical, innocent, cliche, like Midwest, overweight American family.
Yep.
And they go out on this tour, and it's funny because Moondog is just, like, crushing beers the whole time,
and he's, too. Like, talking up Martin Lawrence's character.
In very inappropriate
way. Oh, Captain Whack, man, he's the best on these shores. This is a guarantee you're going to see dolphins out here today.
So, as you can imagine, they, instead of coming across a pack of pool of dolphins, they come across a nice little bit of sharks.
Just sees fins.
So this, I mean, let's fucking. They get, Martin Lawrence goes in the water, gets attacked. He's at first, I thought he was just straight up dead because this movie's like dropping people, and I was like, he's just gonna die. We looked at each other, we're like, he's gonna die. Right?
He was in half of his body was in the shark.
Yeah. So what's the best about this is like, not only does he get attacked by a shark, this random ass little indie movie just throws a wild CGI shot of a shark jumping out of the water and
shark.
Eating Martin Lawrence's leg. hard cut to Martin Lawrence on the boat and his leg footless and bleeding everywhere.
Just the foot missing though, even though the entire lower half of his body was inside of the shark.
Right, we literally, you see him get eaten and then all of a sudden it's just his foot. It's fucking brilliant.
He gets pulled underwater and then he's back.
This whole sequence is just so good. Martin Lawrence is so charming throughout this whole thing. He's so funny. It's a part of another part of this movie where it takes a beeline to shocking you, and all of a sudden you have like in your face gore. And then literally, he's getting loaded in the ambulance. It's like hard screaming, like it seems like it's a horrible thing. And then Moondog comes up, he stops his suffering. Moondog makes a joke, puts his foot on his chest, his severed foot. And he goes, I'll see you next time, and walks away laughing. And he goes, ah, Moondog. Basically, he goes, ah, Moondog, that guy. And then gets loaded into an ambulance on his foot. And Moondog is off to the next part of the chapter of this story.
Yep.
It's fucking brilliant. So, Martin Lawrence's character, I love, because, so there's really only two major black characters in this. It's Snoop Dogg's character and Martin Lawrence's character.
Yeah.
And this whole, like I keep talking about, the themes of this movie is this, like, a white male privilege run amok, especially when we're looking at Matthew McConaughey's character, who gets away with everything in this movie. Snoop Dogg is super rich and well off, but Snoop Dogg is the entertainer. And this has always been a thing in America where white people like to be like, oh, racism's not, like, we beat racism. Look at all these, like, great, power, like, famous black people, and they go to the entertainers. Right to the entertainers. Because that's like, there's a great thing in Do the Right Thing. I'm not going to quote the scene because there's words said that I cannot, but there's a great scene between Spike Lee and John Turturro all about this. It's literally about this. It's amazing. Go watch that. But so Snoop Dogg in this movie can get away with some stuff. Not as much as I'm on the Martin Lawrence run. So. Oh shit, look at that. I just picked up right recording again.
Wow.
Good. Wow.
Welcome back. Some technical difficulties.
I'm going to edit around this. Doesn't matter. So, with Martin Lawrence's character, he's the other side of the spectrum. So, in this, like I said, this whole movie, Matthew McConaughey is getting away with fucking everything. Martin Lawrence, from the minute you get introduced to this character, is talking about how great his life is. And every time you get a glimpse of what his life fucking sucks.
Yeah, it's a mess.
So he's like, this whole movie is about like how Moondog is like, I gotta get back. Like, I can't live if I can't have my riches.
My drugs, yeah, and my cars, and yeah, my house, and my pool.
And here's Martin Lawrence, who has nothing. He's got his little coke-addicted parrot. He's got his... They're fucking driving in his RAV4, or not RAV4, whatever that fucking thing is, that beach cruiser. And he's got orange construction fences as doors. It's like raggedy as hell. And he's smiling.
His whole life in it.
Yeah, but he's smiling, laughing, he goes... Yeah, man, I'm doing well. Look, I got all this. How do you think I got all this? Like, he's so happy to have that. Even that. And then this whole movie is about how Matthew McConaughey has to do anything he can to get this book written so he can finally have his famous rich life back. It's insane. Like, and this is stuff like the movie isn't throwing in your face, but if you take it, like I said, you just take one peek under the covers of this movie and it's all right there in your face and it's fucking great. I love this movie. So happy and so excited because of all this shit. As soon as I started to poke it out and then just kept noticing more and more, I was like, oh my god, this movie is fucking amazing. Because you get to the end and he's done so much bad shit. Like we said, he's literally assaulted people, broken out of court order rehab, which before he goes to court order rehab, the judge tells him, it's rehab or jail time.
Yeah, this is your last chance.
Breaks out of rehab. There's no
repercussions.
Never even comes in contact with law enforcement after that. You'd think there'd be like a scene where they get chased by some cops or something. Nothing.
There is a scene where they get chased by cops. I don't know if you remember this, but it is. I'm fairly certain it's after rehab, where he's living with the homeless people and he takes them all back to
his house. Oh yeah. That was,
and they get taken away in cop cars.
We have to talk about this scene. That was great. That was right after he gets. This is before rehab. This is right when he gets kicked out of the house.
Oh yeah,
where they're like, you have to write the book and everything.
He visits the house twice.
Yeah,
after he gets.
They're like, you can't come back until you like you have to earn this
once before your ownership rehab, once after.
And the what? And when he goes back with the homeless people, what a good scene, man! It's great, so good. And it, like, this movie's all about the haves versus the have-nots. Like, it's such a good scene about the minute you take a have and put him in the situation of the have-nots. He's like, wait, why can't we all just have this? You tell me, like, because it's like immediately it's a perspective switch. Even though he quickly forgets it when he like moves on from that, but like it's that, and the movie knows it. The way it plays it, and it's like such a spectacle of all of them running in slow mo and him jumping in with the baseball bat. It's so performative and it's so great and it's hilarious. All of these homeless people just in this insane Miami mansion in this crazy pool,
yeah,
just partying. And Matthew McConaughey looks homeless throughout this whole movie, so he's fitting in right in with them.
His fanny pack.
Oh, his fanny pack is so good. And he has the same clothes on through most of the movie, and he keeps, like, jumping in pools, the ocean, like, all sorts of different wet situations, and then just lets himself dry out in the Florida sun. But I guess, actually, before we get into, like, the final, everything I had to say about the final themes and everything, we should talk about the whole final thing with Snoop Dogg, because that's kind of your catalyst into the end of this movie. Because there's a moment earlier in the movie where he goes to the Snoop Dogg's boat when he's first looking for help I think it's before rehab.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's two armed guards at the boat and they're like, he's not here. And you kind of think like, oh, Snoop Dogg's going to like abandon him now. And he goes back at the end and you're like, oh, this is going to be like that awkward scene where he like begs for help and Snoop Dogg's like, get out of here, you're a mess.
Yeah.
And Snoop's like, get on the boat, we're about to take off.
Yeah, he's got Jimmy Buffett with him.
It's a good timing. You're like, yeah, let's get fucked up. And then it just goes right back to what the beginning of the movie was, where it's him with Snoop Dogg, Jimmy Buffett, and a bunch of topless girls getting fucked up. And it's like, this is what this movie is. Because that's what life is for these like people like Moondog.
These filthy rich people.
Yeah.
With all these rich friends and not a care in the world, no responsibilities.
Like, so much so that all of a sudden, this is when the law finally does start to catch up. Like, they kind of catch up with him here. And then Snoop's dog, like, is like, but it's you're not even clear if they're there for Moondog or Snoop Dogg. Because Snoop Dogg is all immediately like, hide everything. Here's all this. We get on this plane. And he goes to, like, all his guys, we're going back on the lam again or whatever. Like, literally, like, because they always, I mean, it's the whole thing, and we're like, wow, he's got the armed bodyguards and shit like that. He's like, we're going back to old school shit, basically, and, like, they're all going to go in hiding is what, like, what he's implying. So you're like, oh, is this because of Moondog or Snoop Dogg here? Like, whose thing is this? But all that matters, it doesn't matter, because all that matters is he gives him his barely able to see Rasta pilot, who's always smoking joints the size of your forearm, and a literal wheelbarrow full of weed to go back to the Keys and write the book. And that's your catalyst to the end of the movie, where he literally goes back to the Keys.
Yeah, he never leaves the United States.
Yeah. Takes the wheelbarrow full of weed, which is a great scene of him just going down the street with a wheelbarrow full of weed, and everyone's just like cheering him on, and nobody's trying to take his weed. It's hilarious. He's just like, and everyone's like, yeah, my God, look at all that. And then he goes to the place he was in the beginning of the movie and just starts smoking weed. The best is the Rasta pilot is there the whole time and always just like cheaping shit with him. And he writes his fucking great poetry novel again, and the movie ends with him getting the fucking Pulitzer Prize. And it's like the craziest cherry on top of what this batshit insane movie is, because look at him, he does so much evil shit, and then at the end he wins the Pulitzer, and nobody, there's never even a mention of any of it. There's like never a mention. The minute he turns the book in to Jonah Hill, we forgot to mention Jonah Hill as his agent, who's very fun. The minute he turns that book in to him and Jonah Hill, like they have that meeting or whatever, he's like, yeah, no, people love you. And there's not even like a question about any of the shit that came before. And then he's given an award, and the movie ends with him on top of the fucking world. It's
burning $25 million.
Oh my God! Oh, that's the beauty. The beauty. Oh, I almost forgot but about before the we very get there, yeah. We'll talk about that in a second.
One thing I got to say here. I don't know if you caught on to this a lot, but you know he was. Multiple scenes throughout the movie, he's with random people, whether it be the random tourist in the Keys or sitting with Martin Lawrence on the boat. He always like throws out this line, and that everyone always compliments him, like, "Oh wow, that's beautiful wordplay or whatever." And every single time he goes, "Oh yeah, that's this poet from 1957, like some old poet." So in every it's. Every time he says something poetic, like in the heat of the moment, he always says, "Oh yeah, it's a poet." Like he's plagiarizing essentially.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes you think, like points towards the end, all this poetry he wrote in this book
may not even have been his.
Plagiarized completely.
That's true.
Because I think he when he like turns in the book, he says something to Jonah Hill, and it was a quote he had told someone earlier. I think the lady in the Keys.
God damn, now I need to go. I want to see this movie again regardless, but I really want to go back and think, look at that through line now and see if it works, because that'd be fascinating if not only is he for, like, he gets to win the Pulitzer and forgive all this, if he does it all off of plagiarism, like, he's just a fucking fraud. That makes this story even better. God, this movie is so good. It's insane. Rocking soundtrack. One Jimmy Buffett original songs for this movie rules. And then just some like classic stonery jams. And some like the original score is very good as well. Visually, the movie is fucking great. Like, yes. It looks bright. I mean, it's Miami in
There's
the
There's an entire fireworks display at the end of the movie.
Oh my God. Yes. So I guess we should get into that now, because this like... Actually, I want to read my short little Letterboxd review blurb, because it was what I was saying for the 3 days after I saw the movie. Because I really do think this is a true embodiment of what Harmony Korine was going here. It's a beautiful, hilarious, and incredibly nihilistic portrait of white male privilege run amok. And the nihilism very much becomes apparent in the very end of this movie, when all of a sudden the Joker shows up to burn fucking
25 million.
I thought it was more than 25 million.
I thought it was
a lot of money in cash. I thought it was like 40 million.
In cash.
Because he finally gets his fortune. They're like, oh, it's however many million dollars. He goes, great. I want it all in cash. I want you to put it on a however big enough sailboat. 200-foot
sailboat. Sail it down to the Florida Keys. And I want it in cash on the boat. And they have to hire security because the cash is literally overflowing.
Oh, dude, the shot of the boat coming into port with like the four armed, heavily armed security guards on a boat that literally has cash piled on it.
I'm pretty sure they're like military personnel or ex-US like FBI agents or something. Oh. I think one of them had, or they had, might have a couple of shirts that have some sort of government crest on it. It just makes you laugh because he is supposed to be on the run, you'd think, because he broke out of court-ordered rehab. And
no, he won the Pulitzer because nobody cares about that anymore. But yeah, so it ends up the... It sets up the most beautiful, perfect ending for this crazy, nihilistic movie where he gets on this boat with however many millions of dollars on it, just piled in cash, and he fucking lights that shit on fire. And the scene is crazy because, like, he's already got a giant party started right on the pier, and, like, and then the boat shows up, and everyone's going crazy, and he goes, and he starts this insane fireworks show on the boat, and everyone's going nuts, and then he just lights the boat up. And at first, you're just like, literally, I think this is one of like four times in the movie where, in the last like 10 minutes of the movie, where we turn to each other and we're like, he's going to die. We thought he was going to die when he got into the plane.
Well, he is on a sinking ship.
Yeah. Well, we also thought when he got into the plane with the blind Rastafarian.
Yep.
That he was going to die. We looked at each other like, they're going to crash and die, right? That's going to be the end of this movie. So we kept thinking, we're thinking logically, like, this movie's going to have like some, like, the moral high ground it's going to take at the end is they're just going to kill him.
Yeah, no, in the most embarrassing
way. No, this movie like is that. Being realistic instead, and it's going to reward him, because that's what we do in society. So yeah, he goes out to his boat, lights this shit on fire, and this whole ending is just this beautiful bit of nihilism, because the boat is sinking, and then it just straight explodes, and all they show you at first is the boat from a wide shot just going up.
Yep.
And then cash starts pouring down everyone. Everyone knows Moondog was on the boat, and most likely just died, and there's like a 2-second pause where they're like, and then the cash starts pouring, and they just start cheering and grabbing for cash. And the end of the movie is Moondog in his little skippy boat, fucking charred to the brim with a drink in his hand, fucking coming back to shore just laughing. Amazing. This movie fucking rules.
Yeah, it's a trip.
It's so good. Oh, my God. I mean, even if you don't care about any of that social commentary shit I just talked about, on its very basic level, this is just a wild, entertaining stoner comedy. One of the best, like I said, since Pineapple Express. It just nails it. It is, this is what we were all hoping for when the McConaissance happened. We wanted roles like this. You know, like, this is what we wanted to see. We wanted Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, McConaughey perfectly works as that bum type stereotype where he's just...
Oh, and then you move
back.
He starts wearing women's dresses. Because there's a great gag at the end where he's talking to Snoop Dogg, and they basically were like, you could wear a woman's dress and nobody would notice the difference.
Yeah,
and he puts it on, and it's like, yeah, you just look the same.
I thought the whole point was they were trying to disguise him.
That's right. So basically, they're like, oh, we're going to disguise you. And him and Snoop Dogg are baked as shit. And then...
And they... Aren't they in a green Lamborghini in the one his wife crashed?
Yes, you're right. I forgot about this. Oh, my God.
And Snoop Dogg has, like, a top hat or something. I don't even remember.
Because you get that great line where all of a sudden the cop shot him. He goes, okay, we may have been way too high when we made this plan. Because they're like, Elvis is like, clearly he doesn't look like him. Because they're like driving and talking about it. I was like, yeah, man, this is a great disguise. It's like your classic tweaker scene from like a movie about tweakers where they're like just hopped up on whatever drugs they're on. Talking about how great an idea
is. This is a great plan, yeah.
Yeah, and then they go do it and you see the execution and it's the dumbest fucking thing you could ever do. And this is the stoner comedy version of that where all of a sudden there's like... This is a terrible idea. And they're just laughing about it. It's this movie, it literally, it's pure nihilism. Like, the lens of this movie is like, none of this shit fucking matters. And this is why it doesn't matter. Because we live in a society that rewards this instead of any of the fucking 50 people we showed you on the other side of this movie that deserve it more. It's this guy is the one who's going to win the Pulitzer Prize.
No effort forth in anything. And that's why I think it's... If
literally skips through
thinking
life.
He is plagiarizing it. It makes it worlds funnier. Just because this man is just going through life, putting minimal to no effort forth, and getting millions of dollars, living in mansions in Miami, having anything he could ever want, and nobody can touch him, not the government, not his wife dying. No, it doesn't matter what happens to him. He's always going to live that carefree lifestyle. Nothing's going to bring the rain to him. You know what I mean? Like, he's just going to go through life no matter what happens.
Oh, it's a fucking good movie, guys. I love it so much. don't know. Do you have anything? Do we need to talk about much else? I mean, I think we mentioned everything. We got to everybody.
Yeah, we kind of popped through that movie pretty quick. I mean, without going too much. I mean, we went pretty far.
We don't. Like, I hate going plot by plot. Like, it's pointless. See the movie and you'll know what it's about. This is like, there's so much more going on here than a lot of the people who are just like totally disregarding this movie give it credit for. I saw a lot of people opening weekend who went and saw it and were just like, well, that was just stupid. And like halfway through this movie, I was like, how could anybody call this movie stupid? This is fucking genius level writing. Like, genius level writing.
I guarantee you, I mean, you kind of have to think about, like, if you just go in like, oh, I'm going to go watch this movie and like just something to do and not like actually focus on what you're watching. You just kind of go through and you watch it and it's like, what the hell is even happening? If you're not like paying attention to some of the like the underlying theme, like the whole nihilism, white privilege sort of thing, it's just, what is happening? How is nothing catching up to him? What is going on? So I could definitely see people just not even remotely understanding what the hell is going on. And that makes it even funnier to me.
I know. I just, like, I keep trying to tell people who are, like, hesitant on it. I try to, like, to see it and, like, kind of keep that idea about, like, white male privilege when I'm looking in your head. Like, just think about the things a little bit and don't just watch it as that. Because it is, it's super interesting when you watch it. Like, I don't know. Like you said, there's a reason we didn't take to Spring Breakers when we watched it 6 years ago. Because, like, I didn't pick up on a lot of that.
Well, a lot of the stuff wasn't as relevant.
Well, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, the subtext of movies. Like, yes, there was a lot of shit I wouldn't pick up on then because I just didn't have that frame of thinking. And nowadays, like I said, halfway through this movie, it clicked and it's all I could think about for the rest of the movie. Similar, like, not to go off on a side tangent, but similarly, so there was some, not white privilege wise, but Tim Burton's Dumbo, surprisingly, actually had a thing like this. Huh. Where that movie in that back half all of a sudden turns into a movie that Tim Burton made for Disney that's all about how Disney as a machine is destroying the film industry and people like him have helped them do it. It's pretty fascinating. The movie is okay, it's pretty good. I wouldn't call the movie itself like amazing.
Yeah.
But it is the most interesting Disney live action movie to date because it actually is saying something. It's not just a shot for shot remake. And that the second half of the movie is fascinating, and I think it's legitimately great. It's the first half of the movie that keeps the movie overall from being very good. Because the first half is where they're basically remaking Dumbo, and it's, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. But all of a sudden it goes crazy. Literally, Michael Keaton shows up, gets out of a limousine, and starts just being like Tim Burton big acting. And you're like, oh my god, this is what this movie needed. And from there on out, super entertaining and great. But it's like, I like when all of a sudden these movies you're not expecting it from, all of a sudden they have something to say. And you're like, now you're not just watching it as entertainment, you're watching it as something more. It's like the art form it is meant to be. And I love that shit. And to see it in a stoner comedy is really cool. Obviously, on a larger scale than just like what your basic type of whatever liberal politics are involved in most stoner comedies. But like to actually have something like a real message underlying here and using your film to like super craftily and creatively tell that message in so many different ways, even in ways that most people will never even pick up on. It's just good filmmaking.
Yeah. And you can tell most people in like Hollywood admire this movie and this director because, I mean, he's attracting Snoop Dogg, signs on immediately. You have Martin Lawrence, you have Jimmy Buffett. You have all these giant actors who are, like, completely... in Zac Efron, obviously. He came on for the smallest role, one of the smallest roles in the movie, and, like, his character was just fantastic. And it just shows you that people have respect for the movie this guy's making, even though most people in the general public don't seem to understand it, always doing and think he's insane.
Yeah, I know. And that's like, it's funny because like this movie came out and its opening weekend was like dismal. And so people were like, oh my god, it's a bomb. People aren't seeing it. Like, why don't people see good movies? But like, to be fair, how do you market this movie? Like, all you can do is market it as a stoner comedy and hope enough people care to see it. But at the same time, that market is only so big, especially for in theaters. Like, that's a big home video market for obvious reasons. It's a stoner comedy.
Yeah.
Certain activities like to be partaken when the people watch those movies. So when you can't, and you can't, like, get the other aspects of this movie across in the trailer, you know? So, like, it's a hard movie to sell. And, like, you brought it up earlier, didn't you say it like, made its budget back?
Yeah, just under.
Yeah. That's all these, honestly, a small indie like this, it's all they can really hope for. They're not, this isn't a movie that's ever going to become, like, a mainstream sleeper hit.
No.
This movie's going to have a crazy cult life on VOD and DVD and Blu-ray. Like, I'm going to buy this the day it comes out, watch it a million fucking times. And I'm gonna kind of, like, you know what I'm saying? This is gonna be one of those movies that I'm gonna, like, every time I meet someone, just like, oh, you haven't seen The Beach Bum. And I'm gonna fucking be so excited to show people The Beach Bum and be like, did you get it? Did you fucking get this? Did you see what was going on here? Yeah, it's fucking like funny, but did you get it?
People just gotta be excited for it, because if you're going in like,
oh yeah,
oh, this isn't like looking, if you're looking for stuff to shit on, you're gonna find it, and it's gonna be like, okay, well, you're not even giving this movie a chance.
Yep.
And I feel like that's what some people probably did.
Going, yeah, they saw Zac Efron in Jingle Jeans with frosted tips and like, well, this can't be good. And then I was like, counter, that's actually why it's amazing. They have Zac Efron in frosted tip and Jingle Jeans. One of America's sexiest people is in frosted tip and Jingle Jeans.
We never brought this up, and I'm kind of mad we didn't bring it up earlier.
Uh-huh.
The incredible use of sound effects in this movie.
Oh, yes! We talked about this when we left. Sound design... Legit! The sound design in this movie is flawless. For the craziest shit, like fucking joints being smoked.
Yeah, every time you hear him burning down a joint, you hear the crispness of the blunt being torched. It's hilarious.
Exactly, because it's not like, oh, we're going to use like crazy sound design for like the car accident that kills his wife.
Nope,
that's muted. You don't actually see or hear anything.
Yeah.
It's when he's smoking a joint and like opening a beer and shit like that.
And then obviously Zac Efron has his own sound effect.
Oh my god.
He's got a whip cracking.
Which you can see if you want to see that, you can go watch the trailer and you will see that moment with Zac Efron. But it is so good. It is just this beautiful little moments like that, that in like, it seems so crazy, but this movie manages to pull off. It's so impressive.
Yeah, it's just so wild. It's fun, and like, it actually tells a message, which is amazing.
Yeah, and like we said, we're gonna go back and revisit Spring Breakers. I'm very interested in watching more Harmony Korine stuff, and I think at this point now, anything he makes, we're probably gonna be out to see, because yeah, love this movie. It's my favorite of the year.
It's definitely going to be interesting to see what he puts out next.
I guess that wraps it up for our talk on The Beach Bum. But before we like totally end this and close out, we get to talk about what's going to be at, like, I guess we don't have any solid stuff about what's coming up in the future. But this is, I guess, the official return of this show.
Bring it back.
I'm pretty sure we mentioned this at the top. The whole idea here now is just two brothers that we're going to talk about pop culture. So there's not like any crazy shit like we're trying to do. We're not going to cover news or anything like that anymore. There's plenty of shit. I cover news on my movie podcast too. We don't need to talk that shit.
Also, most people are up to date with
Everyone's on Twitter. This, your fucking news feed updates in 10 seconds. But we're going to talk about a lot of like movies and shit like that. But I think what you're going to end up seeing, and hopefully fairly soon, is one of our upcoming episodes, is we want to revisit Spring Breakers and talk a lot about it. So hopefully we can get that fairly close to this. I'd rather not have like 6 months in between these two if we could get them in. What I would like to do actually is go see Beach Bum again, maybe in like the week after Avengers comes out, because nothing comes out that second weekend. Maybe if Beach Bum is still lingering around, go watch it and then watch Spring Breakers. And then have a podcast about Spring Breakers, being fresh off a second viewing of that. I think that could be cool. But
I think going forward, it's going to be a lot. I mean, there's going to be the stuff we enjoyed.
Yeah, and there's so much shit coming out this year.
In our past, too. And I feel like we're not going to cover any of the main, like, we're not going to cover the Avengers or anything.
No, because I mean, I do my movie podcast, Silver Screen Breakdown, where every week we talk about the new releases. So for the most part, we're not going to be talking about we're not going to like do an Endgame review. Actually, what will probably happen is you'll come on our Endgame review for maybe just a little bit. I don't know. Did you hear what our plan is? What we want to do?
Nope.
We wanted for the Endgame review, we want to get like two people to be on for the whole show, but then get like anyone who wants to talk about Endgame, call in for like 5-10 minutes and just be like, this is what I thought Endgame, and just lay their shit out, and then we'll like respond, and then they can bitch out. And just get like, we just want to hear, because everybody's seeing Endgame. So like, hopefully we can get you in to do that, come pop on for 10 minutes and talk about Endgame, pop out. But what would, like, for new, what end up being here for like new movies would be shit like this, Beach Bum, that Tyler doesn't get to see, or we're not going to cover on the show because it's smaller.
One of the things that comes to mind is like Mayhem. When we saw Mayhem, it was a random movie, and we both absolutely adored it. And like that would, something like that, where it comes out of nowhere, not really a mainstream thing, and we love it, and something we can talk about.
So what I want to, like, I've been doing the breakdown for like going on 2 years now, so like every week I talk about the new releases. What I haven't gotten to do in podcasts is talk about old movies I love, really. Yep. Like, we don't really get to do that much. So we're gonna do a lot here, because anytime there's like a big new release that you really want to talk about, you can always come on Silver Screen Breakdown, and we can like do our whole crossover with that, and you can come talk there. I want to, like, so we got like a Detective Pikachu coming out this summer. We'll do a couple episodes maybe on some favorite Pokemon episodes or some shit like that. Hobbs and Shaw's out this summer. We'll do Fast and Furious lead ups. You know,
maybe we do just one episode of our favorite Fast.
Or maybe even just one episode of covering one of the movies, because I think what we should do, I think maybe we should save for when 10 comes out, or 9, sorry, 9 comes out, we do a straight up, we go each movie, and we do an episode on each movie. We're going to do something with Fast and the Furious this year for Hobbs and Shaw. We got a long time, so we got time. But this is basically, that's the type of shit we're going to be doing. Talking about old shit we love, maybe try and tie it back into what's coming out. If it, like Pokemon, obviously we want to talk about Pokemon. What better time than right now? Yeah. I guarantee you there will be at least one Pokemon episode before or after Detective Pikachu, you know?
Oh, for sure.
If not more, even because we're going to be going fucking crazy.
Shit, man, we could start trading some Pokemon Go stories or some shit like that.
I mean, we're literally talking about today about how we plan on seeing that movie every day opening weekend. As long as it's not dog shit, we're going to see that movie every day opening
weekend. I told you I would see it Thursday through Sunday and maybe twice on Saturday. Yeah. And I meant that wholeheartedly, Zach.
Exactly.
We get three free movies a week.
Exactly. AMC, A-List. Good shit. So yeah, we're going to be doing shit like that. I'm very excited about it because it's going to give me an outlet to talk about a lot of the shit I don't get to on my other show. And like, obviously, you love all this shit, so you get you back in here, and we love talking about this shit.
Yeah, it's always nice. I definitely do want to keep up with like some of the reminiscent shit.
And it's nice because then you don't have to see new shit. Like, I don't have to be like, oh, you have to see this movie this week. We're podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, you can just, if you see something, you love it, we want to talk about it. Otherwise, we can just do old shit.
Yeah, we're not on a timeline necessarily with like the Beach Bum. We didn't.
We saw this 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
2 weeks? Oh, shit.
Week and a half. It was beginning of the month. It was the second.
Yeah, so we're going to take our time with it. We're going to get our thoughts gathered. And if you see it before me, it gives me the time to go and see it. I don't have to see it that week.
Yeah, we're not a new release podcast, so I'm not worried about getting it out that fast. I'm more worried about having good content.
Yeah, just getting some shit out there.
Yeah, we got a bunch. There's so much shit coming out this year. I mean, honestly, there's going to be multiple Pokemon episodes this year because there is a new Pokemon game coming out this year again. And we're going into summer, which is Pokemon Go time. So, like, we'll be doing Pokemon shit sure. There's all sorts of shit this summer, man. There's a fucking new Men in Black movie. We can talk about Men in Black 2 that our uncle worked on. Like, we got plenty of shit we can talk about. We're going to have a lot of fun. I think this is a much better idea than what we originally came out with because I think we were trying too hard. Think of specific things that we both enjoyed growing up to like have like that type of discussion. Then we'd abandon that discussion quickly and just talk about the thing and why we liked it. So it was kind of pointless.
Yep.
So yeah, I think that'll smooth it out. But
we're just gonna fuck off the whole format and just say one topic for an episode.
Yeah.
Talk about it, whatever way it goes.
Keep them shorter.
Yeah.
So we can try and do them every week. No guarantees, though. We do both have busy lives, but we will try and do these every week.
Yeah.
That's what's nice about being able to do this old shit. Just like, oh, we're going to watch episode of Pokemon and talk about it. We're going to watch an episode of fucking Bob's Burgers and talk about it. Whatever we want
to
do.
Yeah, I think it'd be good if we could keep it to like
4 and that'd be fun, too, actually. I didn't even think about that. If all of a sudden, like, there's a new episode of a show, maybe, actually, because, like, when Rick and Morty comes back, maybe we do, like, Rick and Morty every week during Rick and Morty's season. You know, like when they come back, we just become a fucking Rick and Morty podcast.
I don't know, man. You guys on the breakdown.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
In my head, when you said that, I was like, well, Game of Thrones starts in 2 days. So I was like, maybe. And I was like, they're going to talk about that on the breakdown.
I don't know if Tyler watches Game of Thrones. But here's the thing. There's a shit ton of weekly Game of Thrones podcasts. We don't need to be that. I think what we do is, at the very end of the season, we do a Game of Thrones episode where we talk about all of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, or the ending and all. You know, we talk about it as a whole experience.
We should have done one before this season premiere, man. We're missing out. Considering, so I just started watching Game of Thrones at the beginning of March, and I am 2 episodes away from being fully caught up. So, 5 weeks, I think it took me to watch through all 7 seasons.
That's crazy.
So...
But
I got a lot going on.
Still, though, I think at the end of this, at the end of the whole series, if we do like we sit down, and because you just watched it all, and I've watched it since season one aired, different perspectives of it all. But yeah, tons of shit. 2019 is a huge year for fucking mass media and pop culture in general. So
it just gets bigger.
We're skateboarding again. We're gonna have tons of shit to talk about, guys.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But hey, we're back. Tales from the Bunk Bed has returned. Plugs. I guess we do those right.
I guess.
Do you care about them? I don't know. You're not as online as I am.
No, you're a big...
All right, don't find Lucas anywhere. He doesn't want you to find him. He just wants to be on this podcast. And leave him alone!
Slowly, just completely dissipating from social media.
Whereas I am rapidly getting deeper and deeper into the online area. So yeah, anything you have to say to him, just say it to me. You can find me on Twitter at Zach, Z-A-C-H-W-W Movies. I forget what our handle for it. Bunk Bed Tales, maybe, is the handle. I don't know. I'll look it up. It's in my bio.
We'll tweet it out.
Yeah, we're going to have some shit going.
And quote it, and you can find it through our stuff, because maybe we'll pin it to our Twitter.
Yeah. Also, listen to my other podcast if you're already not listening to it, Silver Screen Breakdown. Me and Tyler have a pretty good show, and I like it a lot. Other than that, we're going to talk to you guys hopefully in a week. Way too fucking